I don't worry about the coughs.
Do you want some more?
No, no, thanks.
Okay, Diane, if you just say who you are and...
Okay, I'm Diane Stone. It's hard for me to say my last name sometimes. Stoner. And I give you permission to take my statement.
Oh, wonderful. Do you want to talk about when you started at, is it Divine Unity, and,
yes,
and when you left and what you were hired for, and then get into how your day was and
sure.
So
I was hired by Deborah West to be her personal assistant and house manager. And that was the middle of July, I think. No, it was early July 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, shortly after working there, she made Kathleen the house manager, and I became her personal assistant. And then she let Barbara go, and I became her personal assistant and executive secretary. It was when Deborah offered me the job, she offered me $15 an hour. But as a few days before actually working there, she called me to inform me that she couldn't pay me that. She could only pay me $10 an hour.
Had you already given up a job by then, or what?
No, I had moved here to Montana about a month before that. So, but I had stopped looking for work, and even $10, I knew an hour, people were telling me, was pretty good
for Montana.
For Montana.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I thought, well, you know, I'll try it. It seemed like an interesting place. basically, it became pretty obvious right off the start. It was a nightmare to work for her. She would tell me to do something or tell me how to do something. And, of course, she would forget that she told me that, or later on when I did things the way she asked me to do, it was wrong. And so it was constant every day of never really feeling mm-hmm. like I was achieving anything, which was really hard for me because in the past all my bosses loved me and mm-hmm. thought I did a great job. So mm-hmm. it, each day became harder, and there wasn't really any talking with Deborah. It was every morning I would go upstairs and in her office and have to listen to her for 20 minutes complain about everybody else that worked there. And you know, and then she'd even tell me to go tell them how horrible they were at what they did. And that was very uncomfortable, you know, because I didn't know these people, and I felt it wasn't really my place to do that. So so basically, it just got worse as time went on, and as time went on, I wasn't so much her golden girl anymore, and you know, she didn't even really want to have anything to do with me.
Would you say that her behavior towards you was abusive mentally?
Oh yeah, definitely. It was, you know, I understand what brainwashing is about. And that's how I read it, as tear the person down so that you can make them feel insecure, and then you just have complete control over them,
sure,
which she was trying to do, and I really felt it. But every time I tried to stand up for myself, she did not want to hear it. She would tell me to be quiet. Mm-hmm. In fact, that one day she said, "Don't speak," over and over, which was really rude. And then it got to a point where she could tell I was getting angry with her.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after, she kept telling me not to speak. A few days later, she called me in her office in the morning, and this was another technique. She was telling me, she started out by saying, "Well, you know, Diane, I don't think we really have chemistry." And the way the conversation she was leading it was like, almost like she was going to fire me. And she said, you know, and I knew that she was trying to play another control game mm-hmm. over me. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know what, Deborah, you know, you're right. We don't have chemistry. I've been thinking about that myself. Mm-hmm. And I stared right back at her. And she sort of was caught off guard a little bit by that. But then she told me that she didn't think I should be her personal assistant anymore. And she made Kathleen her personal assistant. And I was just her executive secretary,
right.
or as she later called me, her administrator,
right.
which I was relieved because that way I had less contact with her.
Mm-hmm. Did she give you an explanation for her behavior? And if not, what do you think her perspective was vis-a-vis her relationship with you and indeed everyone on the property? Did she see herself as a queen? Or?
Oh, well, when she came back from Israel, she pretty much summed it all up. You know, I mean, what she has told me before, that her energy is on a higher plane than everybody else. And I, of course, could not understand, you know, where she was at. And but when she came back from Israel, she pointed to her inbox where I would put her papers for the day for her to review, and she seemed very out of it, very manic, and she pointed to her inbox and she said, "I just can't deal in the material world anymore. I am up on a higher plane now, and I don't really want to deal with anything in the material world. So, if there's any important papers that I absolutely need to see, would you please point them out to me? Otherwise, I'm not going to read anything." And she also said that I was giving her a schedule every week for the coming week of what her appointments were. And she told me that she didn't need a schedule anymore, that people if she needed to see someone, then it was at her whim and they needed to be available.
Okay.
So I thought that was like completely out of it. I knew then and there that she had gone over.
Did you ever experience the "I don't need to read this book, I can just touch it"?
I a little bit, but you have to understand, I tried to avoid her.
Okay. Okay.
I really did. I didn't want to be around her very much.
Did you see or hear of her abusing other employees or students there?
Yeah, I did. I heard from Cindy Beeman. Cindy had seen her in one of the SAI sessions go up to Anandra and just take her hand and smack Anandra in the back, and then she took her knees and knocked Anandra's knees from behind out from under her so that Anandra fell to the floor. And, you know, that kind of stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had heard, you know, that she was abusive.
Do you know anything about the Israel trip? I mean, what was the purpose of it? Was it fundraising? Do you know
Yes.
if she made any contacts?
Or? Well, she had an appointment with, I knew she had to be there on September the 11th because she had a big appointment with a banker,
okay.
a female banker. And then there was a sort of a thrown together SAI event you know, there was a lot of, she was very upset about, she wanted to make sure nobody got paid for doing any work, that it was all volunteer work, and, you know, that she wanted all the money from it. I don't know the final outcome of all of that, but I know that she didn't want to pay anybody that worked the event.
I heard from others that the Israeli organizers of the event, for, if you like, volunteer staff,
yeah.
had actually paid people, and that she was absolutely livid
yes.
because she wanted the check is in the post approach, which would enable her to take all the money and not honor any bills. So.
Yeah, well, you know, these things get thrown together, and this is how I saw the Israeli thing. It was thrown together at the last minute. Mm-hmm. Even when she left for Israel, she said, "I don't want anything special done. This is just going to be, you know, just go there and kind of, you know, just play it by ear, do mm-hmm. this and that."
Mm-hmm.
Well, but as soon as she arrived, she was pissed off that nothing had been done, and she expected everybody to volunteer their time. Mm-hmm. And I know she had Susan Halliday and Gallia just falling all over themselves.
Did Susan Halliday pay for her trip? Do you know?
It was my understanding that Susan Halliday had offered to pay for, this is what Deborah had said, that Susan Halliday had offered to pay for her flight. But I know that because Deborah had to, of course, fly first class, Susan Halliday was a little upset at the amount it became. And I don't know if Susan eventually ever did pay for the flight, but I know that Susan flew to Israel on a $300 round-trip ticket herself.
Wow.
You know.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about the other people working up there. There's Esther Michaels, for instance, who I've not met. There are other people up there. And yeah. What part do they play in her organization?
Well, just to briefly, one of the things that Deborah did to me, I just want to go back to how she treated me. Deborah had found out through people, I think it might have been through Kathleen, because Kathleen talked to Deborah a lot at the time. You know, we weren't aware that Deborah would use things against us. So, you know, just like in the office, and I was staying with my father, and my father was being very hard to get along with, almost mm-hmm. abusive. And Deborah, I think, found out about that. I don't know, through Kathleen or somebody. And so she somehow got this idea that I was, a victim. And so anytime I would try to stand up for myself, I was always shot down and told that I was coming from a victim place and I needed to stop doing that. And I couldn't speak until I stopped doing that. And I needed to come from truth and get out of the victim place. And I told Deborah twice that I didn't come to work to be psychoanalyzed. Mm-hmm. I came there to do work. Mm-hmm. And would they please stop it and stay out of my life, mm-hmm. you know, my personal life. Well, when Esther Michaels came on, she came to sort of oversee the operation, I guess you would say. She wasn't really given any title. And Esther started doing the same thing to me, and also to Cindy Beeman. And Cindy Beeman and I, we would talk secretively, because I went to Cindy one day and I said, Cindy, I know she's doing this to you too, and it's horrible, and you know, it was really causing us misery. Mm-hmm. And I had a secret alliance with Cindy that I said, you know, we can't talk to each other, you know, we have to, because we're being the ones picked on right now. And I said, you know, it'll be worse for both of us if we're seen talking together. Mm-hmm. So we talk secretively, you know, and I mean, that's how it worked up there. Mm-hmm. You were forced to, you know, like Kathleen and I got close, but there was a point that I know Esther and Deborah were trying to break up our friendship, and in fact almost did.
Sure.
And, you know, and it was an outburst that Kathleen had at me one day that came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And later on, Kathleen admitted that Deborah and Esther were working to break us up.
So there's Esther Michaels.
Esther came on board. And one day she came downstairs and she was all excited because Deborah had made her a partner. What that meant, I don't know. But Esther was brought on mainly, she said at one point when I was not Deborah's personal assistant anymore, that I was going to be her assistant and I was going to help her with marketing and promotions. But nothing was ever done regarding that.
Was there some of money mentioned by Esther Michaels to buy into this partnership?
I had heard that that there was $20,000 in cash she was to receive, but I did not hear that from Esther.
Deborah was to receive from Esther Michaels?
No, that Esther was to receive, you know, if everything worked out with this partnership,
right.
That she could be making $20,000 a month in cash.
Right. I think I've seen that in one of the memos that went through. Now, what about Cheryl O'Brien?
Cheryl O'Brien is sort of the person who does the dirty work up there, I think. And I felt that from the first 2 weeks I was there. Mm-hmm. And she also squeals on everybody. She'll get you to start talking. You think, you know, she's on your side because she's an outsider. She's not a member. But then she'd go right back. And she did it to me. I saw her do it to everybody. She stabbed everybody in the back.
So she is the one that keeps tabs on the checkbook and all the finances.
And moves the money around.
And Jack West presumably as well, because I noticed that all the pay slips have the Circle of Divine Unity, oblique Deborah West and Jack West, which is a strange way of writing a title on a charity's...
He's got the company credit card or whatever, not a company, but he's got the credit card, one of the credit cards that gets used a lot, and he signs the checks, puts his name on the checks, so...
So him and Cheryl O'Brien, I guess, would be the people in charge of the finances.
And he plays along with the whole game of beating people down and stuff, because one day when Kathleen and I had this falling out and Kathleen kind of lost it, he lied about what went down to Esther Michaels. And then Esther came and yelled at me for the whole thing, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, I didn't do anything, why am I getting yelled at? And that's when I finally realized that I needed to pretend that I had surrendered in a way. And I said, oh yes, I am a victim, you're right, Esther, thank you for pointing that out to me. I've seen the light. And after that point, they got off my back.
Okay. From the phone call you shared with me, the recording on your cell phone, it would appear that Esther Michaels, not least because she went up to Flathead Lake, apparently, with Deborah.
Oh, the whole Shambhala charade.
Shirley Connell and Lisa Swidler. It appears that Esther Michaels knows where the money is put, or at least knows that it is put in different places if she doesn't know where.
Yeah, well, you know, she knows what Deborah tells her.
Sure.
And I do know that when Cheryl was going on vacation, that I thought that Jack would, as usual, handle, you know, the finances and stuff, but Esther made a comment that she was going to be meeting with Cheryl and going over that stuff herself and handling some of it. So that was kind of shocking to me. So I guess Deborah really did make her a partner in crime.
Some respect.
Yeah. She needed, well, you know, Esther was trying to work on some wealthy people in Atlanta and bring in some...
Do you know their names?
No, I unfortunately I don't.
It's probably on the list of contacts.
No, these are people that are in the process of being worked
fresh,
on.
Fresh
meat. And in fact, we should look at, I don't know if I have... I don't have a new SAI list. I think one of the women did come up from Atlanta, but she wasn't one of the rich ones.
Okay. And apparently
David Lean
is one of the people that she's been working on.
Yeah, I don't know how they met. He is a, not a clairvoyant, but he hears tones. I can't remember. You know, like if someone's schizophrenic, supposedly there's a tone that goes with that, and he picks up on that.
Okay.
But he was a contact through someone, I can't remember who, how she got, and he wrote her an email. And then she found out that he had developed this, what do you call them, when, you know, you speak and it types out what you...
Digital voice recognition.
Yeah, he designed a machine, and he was supposedly very wealthy, and Esther and Deborah were working on him to get the money for Shambhala, Eagle's Rest up in Flathead Lake.
And apparently also working on the Israeli banker.
Yes, I don't know for sure what that whole thing was.
Now Barbara told me who it was that she was going to visit.
I know it was very important.
Apparently, she's a billionaire and owns a chain of banks in Israel. She's just about to get married again.
Well, you know, wherever the rich are, that's where Deborah will go.
Sure. And she was over in California earlier on in the year, I think.
I think so, with Barbara.
Sure. Yes, I know, and with Tamayo and others. And and had a
Yeah, and the interesting thing is, with all these people giving her money, the way she talks about them is just shocking. You know, she has no respect for them. Even Shirley and Lisa, her teachers, I mean, if they knew how Deborah talked about them to Kathleen and I,
And
no
to,
respect for
and
them.
to Maya as well.
Oh, all of them. I mean, there's not one person that I think that Deborah really likes.
No.
You know, I mean, she doesn't talk well about anybody.
No.
And she doesn't seem to respect people, her followers at all. She talks like, you know, they're idiots.
Well,
and
in a sense,
she's conned
they are,
them, and look how stupid they
exactly,
are
exactly.
to give me money.
Yes.
I mean, she'll laugh and say things like that. And I thought, God, you know, don't you realize what you're saying? I mean, I work for you. You think I'm going to respect you for being that way? I guess she did.
If I were to ask you what is the most damning thing that she's done or is doing, and you can choose whatever perspective you like, whatever frame you want for that question. Let's say breaking the law, for instance. What would you be able to come up with something?
Well, I think this. Oh, there's so many things that she does that I don't really like. But I think this whole charade about Flathead Lake and the Eagle's Rest, or Shambhala as she calls it, I think that really makes me sick to my stomach, that she's pushing people to give her money to buy this $13 million property so that she can just live in the style that she wants to.
Sure.
And she sees herself as having all the spiritual leaders just meeting there, you know, and the extremes that she goes to promote that, to get money out of these people. It really makes me sick.
Do you think that she's an excellent con artist? Is
oh,
that what it's...
I don't know if I'd say excellent. I mean, she didn't fool me. So, and usually good con artists would fool people. But I guess she's fooling them, and that's all that counts. You know, she's fooling the people she wants to get the money out of.
So she's extorting money from them on the promise of something that doesn't exist in reality.
Well,
really.
This is what really makes me sick, is that she claims that she is channeling Christ's teachings. And I've seen it in emails and letters that she's written to her followers. She has said that if you don't believe me in what I'm telling you about Shambhala, because a lot of people questioned her about that move, they thought it was a bad idea.
Yes.
And she wrote them and said, you know, if you question me, you question Christ. If you don't believe me, you don't believe Christ. And to me, that is really low.
Extreme. Yeah.
Very extreme. You know.
Can you think of anything else that you'd like to add from your experiences that would help to bring out the, if you like, the depths of, I wouldn't say depravity is the right word, but excess, her lifestyle.
Well, it's kind of chilling, but when the Ancient Mother event started, I was wearing a pair, I have this pair of false pearls necklace with kind of antique gold mixed in. And to me, Deborah, when she came back from Israel, she kept saying she hadn't slept and she hadn't been sleeping, and she seemed very manic to me, and I have experience with manic depression. So, but we were standing in the kitchen before she had to go out into her session, and she leans over and grabs my necklace in her fingers, and she had this very weird look on her face, and she said, "I love beautiful things." And it just creeped me out. you know, it was the way she said it, how she said it. She said that before, but it was just in that moment, it really made me sick, because I think it's all about her having beautiful things.
Yes.
And that's what it's really about. And also, I think she does have a mental illness, and that's why she thinks she is this goddess that she thinks she is. And she needs help.
Yes. Yeah, agreed.
But yet, then there's this other side that is just a con artist.
Sure,
and very much aware of what she's doing. Mm-hmm.
And yes, she does need help, but first of all, I think she needs taking off the street.
Oh, so God, she can't damage any other people. She's just taking money from people. Mm-hmm. And demanding it. And demanding that they show up at these events and pay to stay at the Quest House and, you know, I mean, and they do it, but...
Well, can you think of any questions at all? Got anything else you want to add?
I'm drawing a blank.
No, that's okay. So what would you, if you had your wish now regarding Deborah West, what would be the solution?
I think she should be shut down. Mm-hmm. She shouldn't, you know, I mean, she's basically stealing people's money and using it in a personal way, not for any charities. I don't see any. You know, when she hired me, she kept telling me, bragging about how she was helping this monastery over in Tibet and this children's school here in Victor and, you know, this and that. And I never saw any of that. Yeah. I never saw any charity she was doing for anybody but herself.
Yeah, that was my experience as I got to know her well. And then one day she just came out of the blue and said, "The masters have told me I've got to have a third of everything coming into this place, a third of the contributions, everything."
Oh, I would think she would be taking more than that.
That was the beginning.
You know, I mean, she'll take as much as she can.
Paying, she wasn't getting anything at that point.
She's constantly shopping.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, before she went to Israel, she was late for the plane, and then they wouldn't let her board it. Because she was buying a $2,000 necklace in the airport.
Oh, and
when we told her, when supposedly Cheryl told her there wasn't that much money.
In Divine Unity.
Yeah, right. But she put it on the credit card.
Wow.
You know, why she needed that $2,000 necklace.
Mm-hmm.
And then because she was late for the plane, she had to reschedule everything to get her to Israel, and which was perfect because she ended up screwing herself and showing up a day late and almost didn't make that important bank appointment meeting. And she had to go shop for clothes because, of course, her luggage never made it.
Fantastic.
You know, and I went through a lot of pain to make that flight, all those schedules and all those, the way she wanted it, and then she blew it all for a necklace.
Mm-hmm. And did you have contact with her while she was in Israel? Where did you have some manic phone calls?
Actually, no. Mm-hmm. At that point, Esther was dealing with her.
Okay.
Esther had taken over being, you know, the person. Yeah, everybody did. Then Esther kind of blocked everyone out, and she became the point person.
Mm-hmm.
I dealt mostly with Galia, you know, on different things, thank God. And after that, I didn't have a lot of contact.
Mm-hmm.
And I only fed Deborah's ego when I saw her, just to keep her off my back and on, you know, on somebody else's.
Sure. What, were you in any way involved with Cindy leaving? I know she ended up kind of resigning, giving her mother as an excuse.
Yeah.
But I understand from the statement she gave me, it was intolerable.
It was. And she was looking for work. That's one of the things we had our secret, you know, conversations about, was we were both looking for work quietly, desperately trying to get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And it just got to a point where they just, once I had deflected them by saying, "I surrender, you're right, I'm a victim," I told Cindy to do the same thing. And so she started to, I said, "You need to go back now and make excuses for the way you were, you know, just to try to reflect."
Play the game.
Yeah, you've got to play the game until we get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, you know, if we get them off our back, at least we can go to work each day and not want to throw up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we were quietly planning and plotting and trying to get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And she did finally when we had gotten paid, the day we got paid, the day before Cindy gave 2 weeks notice, well, the day we got our checks, Cheryl hadn't, it was the day before, we got paid the day before the event started, registration. Right. So I guess Cheryl was counting that Kathleen and I would deposit our check. Mm-hmm. And Kathleen actually ran to the bank in Hamilton and was told there were no funds to pay her check. So they told her to go to the main branch for Divine Unity, which was in Victor. Mm-hmm. And she called me on the cell phone after the bank manager approved the payment, even though there wasn't any funds. Sure. So Kathleen called me and I ran over to Victor and I got them to pay my check too. Mm-hmm. Thank God. Mm-hmm. And we called Cindy and said, Cindy, you gotta get out of there and go cash your check. Mm-hmm. But she couldn't leave because we weren't there. And that afternoon, Kathleen and I just went for lunch and we were trying to figure out what the hell are we gonna do, you know? And so
Kathleen got out, didn't she?
Well, Cindy called in the next morning after she got her check and said that her husband's mother had taken a turn for the worse and she wouldn't be coming back. Mm-hmm. And then a few days later, Kathleen was fired.
Right.
Because she wouldn't bend to Deborah's demands that she'd be there on Monday when Deborah wasn't even there on.
No, and she'd asked for time off apparently, and it had been granted.
Yeah.
And at the last minute, they wanted to rescind that.
And they did exactly the same thing on the first event to Kathleen.
Sure.
And so that's why Kathleen stood her ground, and I don't think they planned on Kathleen not bending.
Right. So in effect, she was treated very badly.
Yeah.
She was fired for no reason, really,
No, because Kathleen
deceit.
Ran that house like you wouldn't believe. I mean, she was the best thing.
Yeah.
She really was great at her job.
So she was wrongful dismissal in every sense of the word.
Well, because Kathleen had challenged Deborah and said, listen, I'm not asking anymore.
I'm taking the time.
I am taking
it's been
this.
Approved.
I've been telling you I was taking this time.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to take Monday off.
And she had the paperwork saying that the time off was granted.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, no, Deborah was doing her usual power trip and control thing. And then after Kathleen and Cindy left, it was miserable. And I could only last another week until luckily they went up to Flathead Lake. And they weren't around, and then on Friday I just left Esther a resignation letter in her bedroom.
Do you know where they stay at Flathead Lake? I think I've got it somewhere.
Mountain Lake Lodge.
Okay.
It's in Big Fork.
Okay, and do you know how much that cost a week? I heard it was like $700 or $800 a week or something.
Well, it's the rooms are like $160, $170, $180 a night. Depending on what room.
Well, seven times that is
exactly.
a lot of money.
It's an expensive place to stay.
Sure, sure. And presumably...
Well, it's interesting...
Who's paying for that?
Well, when they were leaving on Thursday, Cheryl had already gone to... on her vacation. So I remember Esther downstairs going, how much money, Jack, do we have on this? Oh, we only have this much money, and Jack's going, and Esther goes to Jack, give me your credit card. They're getting ready to go to the mountain up to Flathead. And I remember Esther saying, well, you know what? Shirley, Lisa, and Danny, they have credit cards.
Right. So they're going to pay for it.
Whatever. I'm not going to worry about it. They'll pick it up.
I heard that Danny picked up the limo while they were in LA. You probably don't know anything about this, but a limo was hired and there was no one to pay for it, so Danny ended up paying for it.
Well, I know that Danny, Esther, Lisa, and Shirley shared a room at Mountain Lake Lodge.
Wow.
And Deborah, I guess, had her own.
Of course,
suite.
Yeah.
And
but the Minions all stayed together.
Yeah, and I know that Esther tried to get Sandy Richardson to pay for things too. I remember Esther saying, well, Sandy should pick this up, you know, we're trying to get that Eagle's Rest and, you know, she'll make a huge commission off of that, so we should get Sandy to pay for the rooms.
Mm. Have you any idea how they hope to pay 13, 15 million, whatever it is, for a place? Is it just pie in the sky? Is it a scam to get other people to contribute money with no hope of buying it? Or do they really think they're going to get a donor who's going to give them a lump of money?
Well, that's a good question. I wondered which way it really was. Was it just a scam? But now that it doesn't look like they're coming up with the 500,000 that they need, but they're still pushing it to their followers like this is what's going to happen.
Drawing in money from them.
Yeah, and telling them that they've got money from here and money from there. Oh. And, you know, I don't know. I think in some ways Deborah sees herself there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's supposed to be a beautiful place.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure,
you know, it is. And she would love to hold court for all the spiritual leaders around the world, wouldn't
sure
she?
Thing.
And Esther was setting up a guy to come give him a quote while they were up there for a heliport that they wanted to put in. And I thought, well, that's either a charade. I mean, a heliport, come on. You know, I mean, to me, it's a con.
Yes, it is a con.
And the more that Shirley and Lisa and Tamayo and all of these people believe that this is going to happen, the more they're going to give money.
Sure. And I bet this money is being given unconditionally. In other words, with no hope of getting it back if it doesn't go ahead, it's just given to...
I guess so.
Yeah. Because that's how she does it from year to year.
I mean, she had to do the same thing for the lodge up here.
She did, and she was doing it while I was there. Yeah. And then that fizzled out when she needed a new enterprise.
Yeah, to generate money again.
Okay. Just before we finish off, Diane, and thank you very much, Esther Michaels, you were kind enough to share that phone message that was recorded on your cell phone. I understand that she's called you once or twice since to try and hook you back in.
Yes.
And you're basically playing the game until you get your paycheck.
Yes.
Because I understand you're owed $700 or $800.
Yeah.
And hope to get it at the end of this week?
Thursday. Which is the normal payday, and that's when they have to pay me. I am holding a receipt for Deborah's dry cleaning. She's got about 15 items of clothes and the dry cleaners, and it's all in my name, and I'm holding on to that, and they know it. Mm-hmm. Until I get my check. She's not going to get her dry cleaning.
Okay. I don't want to put ideas into Kathleen's mind, but has she considered getting some kind of severance pay while she's hanging on to Deborah's necklace or whatever it is she's hanging on to?
I don't know. She told me today that unemployment was denied. So she, for the time that she's been down, she will not get unemployment.
Why was it denied? Because of a bad reference from Deborah West?
It's my understanding if you're fired, you don't necessarily get unemployment.
That's right. But technically speaking, she was not fired. It was wrongful dismissal.
Well, that's not according to Deborah West.
Of course not according to Deborah West, but I would think that there is enough evidence around from all of our discussions and a year's work that I've put into it, which will be able to prove that she was wrongfully dismissed, just like that.
Yeah.
So.
And she was, as far as I was concerned.
Then.
I think it was a whole power trip that they didn't, they thought that. That went wrong, and Kathleen really wouldn't have walked out, but Kathleen took them at their word.
Okay. Well, would you convey to Kathleen from me that she has a lot of information around her that could be used to prove wrongful dismissal, and she has some leverage in the belongings that she has, and that maybe she shouldn't give them up without considering...
Yeah, well, especially since Kathleen wrote a lot of her own personal checks for things in the very beginning, and which caused her to be overdrawn on her own checking account.
Gosh.
And then it kind of spiraled out of control after that, and she's still trying to catch up.
Right.
From that.
So then, really, morally, she is owed restitution from Deborah
West.
Well,
in fact, Esther Michaels bounced a check on her for $15.
Okay.
At the first SAI event, when we met Esther, you know, and Kathleen was just stunned by that Esther didn't even have $15 in her own account when she, you know, and I think that's one of the reasons Esther took the bait of money.
Of course.
She was living with her brother in Atlanta. And
absolutely. Well, you'd be aware that Joseph Costantino is making a claim through the job board or whatever it's called, the employment board. He's owed approximately $10,000 in back pay.
Wow.
You're owed pay. Kathleen was wrongfully dismissed and used some of her own money. So I would think that there is a real cast iron case for Kathleen to get restitution from Deborah West. So my advice, and maybe I shouldn't be giving this, is that she shouldn't give up the leverage. Like you're using the dry cleaning as leverage, maybe she shouldn't give up those belongings. And if Deborah West has gone to the police saying, I want my belongings, then I don't think the police are getting involved, and you've said as much. Then maybe Kathleen should say, well, you'll get your belongings back when I get 2 weeks' notice, or whatever it is.
2 weeks' severance.
That's it.
Or
and if you
me
want to take me to court for these belongings, then nothing would give me greater pleasure, because I have a mountain of information, because John Watson's offered to share his stuff, and
yeah.
I don't think you're going to go there. So write off your belongings, or give me $1,000 or $700 in severance pay.
Right.
And by the way, I've added up my checkbook, and these are the amounts I spent to run your household, whatever, and that goes on top. Make your mind up.
Right.
That would be my advice.
Yeah. I'll tell her that. And I've also even thought myself of telling Esther tomorrow, okay, well, let me work out the week here at this job, and I'll come back to work at Divine Unity. But have my check ready for me on Thursday.
On Thursday. If you have it ready for me on Thursday,
I'll come back to
then
her.
We're on.
Yeah.
But
if you
don't phone me again.
Yeah.
And that will, oh, okay, we've got her. Let's pay her.
Yeah. I mean, it's terrible what you have to do to get your money, but...
Okay. Do you have a CD player, a little boom box or a stereo that plays audio
yes.
CDs?
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you a copy of this.
Okay.
And then you can play my comments to Kathleen if
okay.
you want.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. But tell her not to give up.
Well, I know she wants to talk to you.
Sure.
So...
Well, she could have come this evening.
I know. She was... When I told her I was coming, she... said she would like to, but then she didn't realize her daughter, she forgot her daughter had a thing at school tonight, so
okay.
she couldn't come.
Well, she's just tell her to phone me. I mean, I'm so
yeah.
grateful for what you've all done, and we're all kind of friends now. We're all in
yeah.
this together.
Yeah.
So we'll stick together.
Yeah, I mean, there's some good that comes out of
yeah, and I'm happy to help and advise her, and I've spent a lot in legal fees, and that's okay. We can afford it. But I'm happy to share, like you've shared and Kathleen has, to help her. And my advice is that she shouldn't give back those belongings.
Yeah.
They are not only collateral for her to get something out of it.
That's true.
They are a point of tension between her and Deborah
yes.
West. And
especially when Deborah loves beautiful
right.
things.
Sure, sure.
So.
Sure.
And her pearls,
okay.
I think, are pretty important to her.
Well, I know you've got to go now, so I want
oh,
to
yeah.
thank you for the statement.
And is there a right
God
for
bless.
Being written and given to Jennifer? I know she said you could tape it.
I tape it. I put it into an audio cassette and then give it to Jennifer.
Sure.
Jennifer transcribes it. And she doesn't actually give me a copy of the transcriptions, but I can give you a copy of this that you can play on your audio
yeah.
CD.
No problem.